Today's scripture reading is from Genesis 28, verses 10 through 19. Jacob left Beersheba and went towards Haran. He came to a certain place and stayed there for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones, he put it under his head and lay down in that place. And he dreamed that there was a ladder set up on the earth, the top of it reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And the Lord stood beside him and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and to your offspring, and your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south, and all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you and your offspring. Know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I promised you. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, How awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. So Jacob rose early in the morning, and he took the stone that had put under his head and set it up for a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. He called that place Bethel. Before that, it had been named Luz. These are our sacred stories. Thanks be to God.
Fleeing for his life, running from his brother Esau's murderous rage after Jacob has stolen not only Esau's birthright, but also his blessing, Jacob runs away from home. Jacob is vulnerable. He's isolated. He's trying to stay alive. He is all alone. My brother and I played that record over and over. The record player and minimal record collection from our dad's college days were kept in Steve's room, the only place they'd fit in the tiny parsonage. While we enjoyed the Creedence Clearwater Revival album, it was the Simon and Garfunkel that we played over and over. The album had a single on each side, The Sound of Silence and Homeward Bound. The Sound of Silence and Homeward Bound have been ringing in my ears as I've spent time with this Sunday's lection. Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk to you again. And every day is an endless stream of cigarettes and magazines, and each town looks the same to me, the movies and the factories, and every stranger's face I see reminds me that I long to be homeward bound. I wish I was homeward bound. Jacob stops for the night. The NRSV that Jody read says he came to a certain place, but the Hebrew verb here is strike. Jacob strikes upon a place selected because the sun is setting, a place he literally hits upon. Jacob stops because it's getting dark. Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk to you again because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. Indeed, in the silence of that night, his head resting on a rock, Jacob has a dream. His vision fills with a ladder that reaches to heaven, and the ladder has messengers of God going up and down on it. It's a divine sanctuary through which heaven and earth are connected. This stairway does not give Jacob access to heaven, rather, God comes down and speaks to Jacob where Jacob is. God is present, not far away. God is not removed, calling from a distance, but rather is right next to Jacob, at his side. In the silence and the darkness, Jacob finally stops. He rests from his anxious fleeing. It is into this rest that God comes. And the Lord stood beside him and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring, and your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south, and all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your offspring. Know that I am with you, and I will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. God reiterates the promises that God made to Jacob's ancestors, to Abraham and Sarah, to Isaac and Rebekah. And now, God offers to be the God of Jacob also. In addition to the promises already made to Jacob's ancestors, God adds, Know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I promised you. This is the promise of presence. The promise of presence made to someone alone and afraid, facing an unknown future and an unknown landscape. Certainly, a promise from God to be present is not unique to Jacob. God has been with us from the moment of creation. Unique to Jacob is the promise to bring Jacob back home. The promise that Jacob will one day be again homeward bound. Biblical scholars tell us that the Pentateuch likely came into its final form while the people were in exile. Imagine what these promises to Jacob sound like to a community in exile. Indeed, how do these promises sound in our ears as we face our own uncertain future? As we're surrounded by the threat of death, as we feel, and so many of us are, so very alone, what might a promise that God will be with us and bring us back home, not home as a location for us, as we're at home, many of us almost exclusively at home for months and months, but home as a state of being, home as a mooring, a settled rest, like a child at home, as one of our favorite hymns at Covenant puts it. Jacob finds rest, and into this rest comes a dream, comes the promises. Into this rest, God's nearness is made known. Then Jacob woke from his sleep and said, Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid, and said, How awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. So Jacob rose early in the morning, and he took the stone that he had put under his head, and he set it up for a pillar, and he poured oil on top of it, and he called the place Bethel. Bethel means the house of God. This place, chosen because it was growing dark, this place that Jacob hit upon, struck. This place is the house of God. It is holy. This place contained God's presence, and Jacob did not even know it. And now that he knows, he builds an altar from his stone pillow, and he worships. When Jacob sets out once again, he does not go alone. He now has God as a traveling companion. Jacob is changed, yes, and it's worth noting that he's not transformed and then God joins him. He's not judged, convicted, repentant. He doesn't say a prayer. God says nothing about Jacob's treatment of his brother or father, and Jacob doesn't mention his behavior to God. God offers unconditional promises and unconditional presence. Jacob experiences divine presence, and Jacob is transformed. The place is transformed. The stone is transformed. The ordinary becomes extraordinary, holy, through divine presence. God's presence breaks into fear, terror, loneliness. Jacob's dream of God's connection to the world has a transformative effect on the waking world. This pattern is repeated with other dreams and visions throughout the stories of the Bible, just as God appears again and again, not to royalty or priests, but to terrified refugees, to children, to those who face uncertain futures. God is present. We are all in Bethel, the house of God. Our beautiful sanctuary on Caroline Street is certainly a house of God, but so is each place we lay our heads. We are surrounded by divine presence. These are challenging days, unprecedented days, long days. And I am grateful for each one of you. Thinking of your beautiful faces and hearing from you has been a boon to my most difficult moments. And I need a reminder that God is here, here where I am, and there where you are, that the divine is present. In her book, An Altar in the World, A Geography of Faith, retired Episcopalian priest Barbara Brown Taylor writes, "Earth is so thick with divine possibility that it is a wonder we can walk anywhere without cracking our shins on altars." Cracking our shins on altars. This makes me think of the verb selected for how Jacob found where to sleep as it grew dark. He cracked his shin. He struck it. I confess that I miss these altars more often than I would like. I can sing with Simon and Garfunkel in Homeward Bound that each town looks the same to me, but really it's each day. My days often blend one into the next. Could this relentless sameness of virus and death and poor leadership, of systemic racism, of fear and uncertainty, could it be changed by altars, by noticing the presence of God? When Jacob awoke from his dream, he acknowledged his experience. He acknowledged God's presence in a rather ordinary place. And Jacob built an altar, converting his pillow, just another stone from that place, into a house of worship, a place of worship and altar. How do we do this in our lives? How do we say, "Here, here is where I find the most holy. This is the place where the divine has come near"? How do we mark our divine encounters? Divine mystery is here, surrounding us. Take a deep breath, stare into space, say a prayer. Listen and listen some more. Paint, walk barefoot, dance, draw. Find perspective. God promises Jacob that God will be with him, a promise that grows in significance given the fact that Jacob is alone, fleeing for his life, entering an unknown future and an unknown landscape. And Jacob builds an altar. We're constantly running into experiences that might inspire altars. Maybe we don't crack our shins on them. Maybe we don't literally hit them. But divine mystery shows up in unexpected ways and at unexpected times. And our job is to rest long enough to notice. We're doing pretty well if we stop and notice the color of the sky, the tears in the eyes of our neighbor as he tells us about his father's fall and broken hip, the lizard in the garden. We're called to pay attention to these moments, to see them for what they are, moments of connection with something beyond ourselves, moments of transcendence, holy encounters. If the sacred is everywhere and all we need do is notice, why isn't simply noticing enough? Why build an altar? Noah builds an altar after the flood. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, they all build altars. Exodus and Leviticus are full of specs on altars. Altars are in homes and sanctuaries and synagogues. You can find them on trails, along the sides of roads and cornfields, and in skyscrapers. Do you have an altar? I don't. Not yet. I'm thinking of creating one in the backyard this week. Maybe you want to do the same. A place to mark that God is present, that the holy is near. We might use rocks, paint, marker, seed, wood, cloth. Really, anything can be used to create a physical altar to connect God's presence with an ordinary place, to remind ourselves that the holy is all around us, that everywhere is Beth El, the house of God. At a point of limbo, landless, rootless, and with no real prospects for the future, God meets Jacob at a place of no particular significance and transforms it into the house of God. Each place we are is the house of God. We are surrounded by divine presence. The holy is everywhere. Jacob rests from his anxious fleeing, and into this rest, God is made known. I pray we find the rest we need to notice the holy all around us. I pray we find the rest we need to notice the holy all around us. This day and every day. Amen.